The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Some weeks ago, I introduced for the first time in this series a play based on a short story by Bret Hart. Today, I've turned to the same author and chosen another of his famous stories of the West. I'm going to play the same role I played before, that of Oakhurst the Gambler. So now, I'm going to tell you Bret Hart's story of The Luck of Roaring Camp. Commotion in Roaring Camp. It couldn't have been a fight, for in 1850 that was not novel enough to have called together the whole settlement. Not only the ditches and claims were deserted, but Tuttle's grocery had even contributed its gamblers. The whole camp was collected before a rude cabin on the outer edge of the clearing. Conversation was carried on in a low tone, but the name of a woman was frequently repeated. It was a name familiar enough in the camp, Cherokee Sarah.
Say, I reckon it's kind of tough on poor old Sal coming on her like this. Not another woman to help her this side of Red Dog, you know.
Ain't no better than she ought to be, that's true, but doggone it, somebody ought to do something for her. You go in there, Stumpy, and see what you can do. You've had experience of this.
Yeah, go on, Stumpy. It's up to you. Just can't leave her lie there. Go on in and see what you can do.
Well, you think that's right?
Of course it's right, man. It's your plain duty to go and help her. You're the only married man among us.
Well, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, sure, he's a man. You go on in.
Well, gentlemen, any bets on the result? I'll lay a 5-3 Sal pulls through. Any takers?
Done, Oakhurst, and the same odds of the kid.
5-3, sir. Any side bets on the sex of the child?
2-1, it's a boy.
Well, let's hope it isn't that. One female's more than enough for a roaring camp. What about the color of its hair?
I'll lay you 5-1, as black as your head, Oakhurst, like Cherokee Sal.
I'll take that. $20. It's fair, like Kanaka Joe was.
Well, we shall soon know, gentlemen. You hear that? Yeah.
Good old Cherokee Sal, she's done it.
The camp rose to its feet as one man. It was proposed to explode a barrel of gunpowder, but in consideration of the situation of the mother, better counsels prevailed, and only a few revolvers were discharged. It was just as well, for whether owing to the rude surgery of the camp or for some other reason, Cherokee Sal was sinking fast. Within an hour, she had climbed that rugged road that led to the stars, and so passed out of Roaring Camp, its sin and shame, forever.
Poor old Sal. She made a good fight of it, but I guess the cards was just stacked against her.
Yeah, I reckon that's right. But what happens to the kid now? Guess it'll die, won't it?
It hasn't even chance, I'd say. What do you think, Stumpy?
I don't know. Hey, maybe we can pull it through on milk.
But there ain't no cows here about, as I know of.
There's an ass down the gully just to give them milk. Maybe that'll do. Well, ain't nothing else.
Say, Stumpy, can we go and see him now?
Well, no reason why not. You won't be disturbing Sal anymore. I was thinking that maybe we ought to take a collection for the kid or
that's
something.
That's a good idea. And if everyone who wants to take a look at the child must put something in the hat. Mm. This way, gentlemen, and have your contributions.
Okay, that's fine.
The door of the hut was opened, and the anxious crowd of men who had already formed themselves into a queue entered in single file. Beside the low bunk or shelf on which the figure of the mother was starkly outlined below the blankets stood a pine table. On this a candle box was placed, and within it, swathed in staring red flannel, lay the last arrival at Roaring Camp. Beside the candle box was placed a hat.
Now, one at a time, if you please, gentlemen. No crowding back there. Now, gentlemen will please pass in at the front door, round the table, and out the back door. And them that wishes to contribute anything towards the offering will find a hat handy. Take your hats off there, please, gentlemen. One at a time, if you please.
Thank you, sir. Very generous of you.
Is that him?
That's him, sir. An unfortunate orphan.
Mighty small specimen, ain't he?
We hope he'll grow bigger with time, sir. They frequently do.
And got more in the color.
Dark hair, you'll notice. Somebody owes me $5. You, sir. Put in the hat, please.
Ain't any bigger than a derringer.
Thank you, sir. A diamond breast pin. Very generous.
Here, take this ring. I'll go 2 diamonds better.
Any advance on 3 diamonds? Has nobody got the 5?
Well, this here's a Navy revolver, silver mounted.
So the collection went on. A silver tobacco box, a doubloon, a gold nugget, a very beautifully embroidered handkerchief from Oakhurst, the gambler, a slingshot, a Bible, contributor undetected, a golden spur, a silver teaspoon, the initials were not the givers, a pair of surgeon's shears, a lancet, a Bank of England note for £5 at about $200 in loose gold and silver coin.
Well, I reckon that's about the lot of them. How's the collection, Oakhurst?
Pretty varied, I'm afraid. Still, give him a start in life, poor little beggar.
Hey, look at this here now. Look at him.
What's the matter? Look at Kentuck.
He's gotten a hold of my finger. Why, that dang little curse. Why, you see, he's a-wrestling with my finger. That dang little curse.
It was 4 o'clock before the camp sought repose. A light burned in the cabin where the watchers sat, for Stumpy did not go to bed that night. Nor did Kentuck. He drank quite freely and related with great gusto his experience, invariably ending with the same description of the child. When everyone else had gone to bed, he walked down to the river and whistled reflectively. Then he walked up the gulch to the lighted cabin.
Who is it? Oh, it's you, Kentuck.
Yeah. How goes it, Stumper?
All serene.
Anything up with the kid, I mean?
No, nothing.
You know, he wrestled with my finger. Wrestled with it. That dang little curse. Well, good night now.
Yeah, good night, Kentuck. Good night.
The next day, Cherokee Sal had such rude sepulchre as Roaring Camp afforded. After her body had been committed to the hillside, there was a formal meeting of the camp to discuss what should be done with her infant. A resolution to adopt it was unanimous and enthusiastic. But an animated discussion in regard to the manner and feasibility of providing for its wants at once sprang up.
We can't possibly look after a kid in the camp. It ain't right to expect it of us. We should send it somewhere where there's women.
Oh, nonsense. We'll manage all right.
Why not send it down to Red Dog, where they can look after
it? Keep it here at Roaring Camp.
Gentlemen, order, please. We all seem to be agreed that the child should be kept on here at the camp.
That's right.
Them fellas at Red Dog would swap it and ring in somebody else on it.
How about bringing a nurse up to the camp?
Why, no decent woman would come here. We don't want any more of the other kind.
What do you say, Stumpy? You're the one that's been looking after the child so far.
Oh, me and Ginny will manage.
Who's Ginny?
Ginny's the ass that's been acting as a foster mother. Is the child taking the milk?
Lapping it up.
And you think you'll be able to play the hand out?
Ain't never throwed in my cards this far.
That's right. Well, gentlemen, it seems to me that the child's in very good hands. Are we agreed that it'd be left to Stumpy here to look after it?
Yep. Leave it to him.
Well, that seems the best solution. Stumpy and Ginny between them.
Well, what about Duds and things?
I was coming to that. As everybody knows, yesterday's collection turned out very well. It ought to be quite enough to buy a few of the things that we need for the child, and the express man here can buy them for us back in Sacramento. Now, I must confess, as a bachelor, that I'm not rightly sure what we'll need to buy. Perhaps some gentleman could help us.
Oh, I got the list here. It's a whole outfit.
You. I guess. Yeah, of course. Yeah, all very necessary. Well, gentlemen, I can see that Stumpy has the whole thing taken care of. As treasurer of the fund, I move that we leave these details to his discretion. Is that agreed?
Yes, sure.
Very well, then. Where's the express man?
Here
ah, there you are, Nick. Here's the list, and here's a bag of gold dust that ought to cover the lot. Mind you, we want the best that can be got. Lace, you know, and filigree work and frills.
Oh, you leave it to me, Mr. Oakhurst.
Yep.
Anything else?
Yeah, dang the course.
That's right. That's right.
Strange to say, the child thrived. Perhaps the invigorating climate of the mountain camp was compensation for material deficiencies. Nature took the foundling to her broader breast. In that rare atmosphere of the Sierra foothills, He may have found food and nourishment, or a subtle chemistry that transmuted ass's milk into lime and phosphorus. Be that as it may, the child grew sturdier and stronger every day.
Now, I'm telling you, me and the ass has been father and mother to him. Yes, and don't you ever go back on us here, young'un.
I tell you what, Stumpy, it's time we found a name for him. We can't call him young'un when he's grown up, you know.
Well, guess that's right.
Most of the fellas call him the kid or Stumper's boy. That ain't no better.
No, when he won't quit hollering at nights, I've heard him call him the coyote.
And guess you'd holler if they filled your corn jug with ass's milk.
I'm telling you, he's a dang little cuss. A fair dang little cuss he is.
Well, don't reckon any of those names will stick. Not when he gets to walking and running around.
Guess that's right. I'll
tell you one thing. The kid brought luck to Roaring Camp. We made better strikes since he came here than he ever did before. Ain't that right?
Sure. Yeah. Look at that strike down by Red Pine Gap.
Well, he got no farther, and we never knew Sal's real name. So why not call him Luck?
Why, that's the dangest name I ever heard. What about his given name?
How about Tommy? Tommy Luck.
Sounds all right to me.
After all, better to take a fresh deal all around. Call him Tommy Luck and start him fair.
The day was accordingly set apart for the christening. What was meant by that ceremony, you can only imagine when you remember the reckless irreverence of Roaring Camp. The master of the ceremonies was one Boston, a noted wag, and the occasion seemed to promise the greatest facetiousness. This ingenious satirist had spent 2 days in preparing a burlesque of the church service with pointed local allusions. The choir was properly trained, and Sandy Tipton was to stand godfather. But after the procession had marched to the grove with music and banners, and the child had been deposited before a mock altar, Stumpy stepped before the expectant crowd.
All right, boys, you've had your fun. It ain't my style to spoil fun, but it strikes me that it ain't exactly on the square. It's plain to put a low down on this baby to ring in the fun on him that he ain't going to understand. And if there's going to be any godfathers around, I'd like to see who's got any better rights to them than me. But we're here for a christening, and we'll have it. Now, I proclaim you Thomas Luck, according to the laws of the United States and the state of California. So help my God.
First time that the name of the deity had ever been uttered in the camp, otherwise than profanely. The form of the christening was perhaps even more ludicrous than the satirist had conceived. But strangely enough, nobody saw it and nobody laughed. Tommy was christened as seriously as he would have been under a Christian roof, and cried and was comforted in as orthodox a fashion. He had become the Luck of Roaring Camp.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Tomorrow is a day for all lovers of the arts. Just lend a listening ear to the brilliant lineup ahead on NBC. Music? There's a special treat in the hour-long broadcast of Verdi's La Traviata, as performed by the Kansas City Philharmonic Association. Licia Albanese, Thomas Hayward, and Walter Castle have the leading roles, and Hans Schweiger conducts, while Maestro Arturo Toscanini follows with this week's NBC Symphony offering, Tchaikovsky's Pathétique, and the stirring overture to the Barber of Seville by Rossini. Then it's collector's item, the program tailored to the tastes of the art lover, bringing you William Schumann, head of the Juilliard School of Music in New York, with some words on music and the dance, plus a mammoth masthead of speakers on anything you can think of in the cultural realm. Literature, drama, you're treated to a taste of the best on tomorrow's classical offering, Dickens' Great Expectations. Cyril Richard, noted British actor-director, portrays dual roles in this time-honored tale, the tale of an orphan who acquires a fortune and is plunged into a strange mystery as a result, on tomorrow's NBC Star Playhouse. And just in case the marital arts are your forte, we have The Marriage with your favorite always-in-love couple, the Marriotts. Somewhat ruffled tomorrow when daughter Emily decides her father is not the Sir Galahad she thought him to be. All part of your Sunday listening, so relax and enjoy the best tomorrow on NBC.
For now, we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Tommy Luck had been christened. And from that day forth, the work of regeneration began in Roaring Camp. Almost imperceptibly, a change came over the settlement. The cabin assigned to the Luck, as he was generally called, was the first to show signs of improvement. It was kept scrupulously clean and whitewashed. Then it was boarded, clothed, and papered. The rosewood cradle, packed 80 miles by mule, became the first of a new sort of furniture. The men who were in the habit of lounging in at Stumpy's to see how the Luck got on seemed to appreciate the change. Even Tuttle's Grocery had to import a mirror and a carpet out of self-defense. Nor were the men allowed to go shouting and yelling round the camp as they used to do. The Luck might be asleep and must never be disturbed. The men began to converse in whispers and spoke with Indian gravity. Profanity was tacitly given up in the sacred precincts. Even in Tuttle's Grocery, the card playing was affected.
All right, Oakhurst. I'll double you.
All right, 50. What do you got?
Three ladies.
Well, too bad, then. Three kings.
Oh, dang the luck.
Mr. Tipton, please. I thought we'd agreed never to use that expression anymore.
Oh, well, curse the cards.
No cussing, Mr. Tipton, if you please.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
On the long summer days, the Luck was usually carried to the gulch from whence the golden store of Roaring Camp was taken. There, on a blanket spread over pine boughs, he would lie while the men were working in the ditches below. Latterly, there had been a rude attempt to decorate this bower with flowers and sweet-smelling shrubs. And generally, someone would bring him a cluster of wild honeysuckles, azaleas, or the painted blossoms of Las Mariposas. The men had suddenly awakened to the fact that there were beauty and significance in these trifles.
Say, look here, Stumper.
What you got there?
A flake of mica. Pick it up in the holler. Thought it'd do for the Luck. You see? Oh, look here, Thomas. See how it glitters in the sun?
Well, thank you, Kentuck. That's mighty kind of you. We're much obliged, ain't we, son?
Pretty flowers you got here, too, Stumper.
Oh, just some flowers that the boys brought in for him. He's kind of fond of flowers.
I'll bring him some next week when I'm out this way.
Well, thanks, Kentuck. And thanks for minding them yesterday while I was over at the store.
No trouble at all, Stumper. You know what? I left him for a minute. Santa called me over. And when I come back again, you know what? Darn my skin if he went talking to a jaybird as was sitting on his lap. There they was, just as free and sociable as anything you please. A jawing at each other just like two cherry bums.
Oh, he's cute, all right. You see, I was never out of temper with himself, quiet as a rabbit. Every blessed minute of the day.
Yes, that's right. Ever since he quit hollering at night with his teeth.
Say, remember that time he crept out of his corral and dropped over the bank on his head in the soft earth?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I sure remember then.
Dropped on his head and stayed there with his legs in the air for at least 5 minutes, must have been. Never yelled out or nothing. Quietest thing in Roaring Camp.
That's right. He's the Luck, all right.
Such was the golden summer of Roaring Camp. There were flush times, and the Luck was with them. The claims had yielded enormously. The camp was jealous of its privileges and looked suspiciously on strangers. No encouragement was given to immigration, and to make their seclusion more perfect, the land on either side of the mountain wall that surrounded the camp, they duly preempted. This, and a reputation for singular proficiency with the revolver, kept the reserve of Roaring Camp inviolate.
No, you're right there, Mr. Oakhurst. Let a man keep his own to himself. That's what I always say.
Mighty sound principle, Nick. There's no room for strangers around here. Not with the strikes like we've been having them lately.
Yeah, that's what I heard. You've had a good summer, then.
Well, let's just say we've no cause for complaint. No cause at all.
Well, you've got the Luck over here, then. They could do with a bit over in Red Dog. It's been petering out lately.
Well, as you say, we've got the Luck over here. Little Tommy Luck. He's been worth more than his weight in gold to us already.
Those things all right that I brought over for him?
Excellent. Nothing but the best, which he deserves. We always like to do the best we can for the Luck.
So you do.
Mm.
I was telling him back there in Red Dog that they were street up there in Roaring, I was saying that it'd lay over any street in Red Dog. They've vines and flowers around their houses, and they wash themselves twice a day. But they're mighty rough on strangers, and they worship an Indian baby.
An Indian baby?
Sure, that's what I tell them. Just so they'd keep away.
With the prosperity of the camp came a desire for further improvement. It was proposed to build a hotel the following spring, and to invite one or two decent families to reside there for the sake of the luck, who might perhaps profit by female companionship. The sacrifice that this concession to the sex cost the men can only be accounted for by the very highest affection for the child.
What, women? Here in Roaring Camp?
Well, why not if they's decent women?
Women.
Of course, we'll have to clean the place up for them a bit. But we've done plenty in that direction already. Besides, people are good for business.
Good for your business, perhaps. A lot of tenderfeet with money to throw away. What's wrong with our money? You win that regular enough, don't you?
I have my share in the luck, of course. But anyhow, we can't do anything till after the winter. The trail will soon be closed till the spring, like enough, if we get bad weather.
Yeah, it's that North Fork that I'm worried about. Guess we'll have a pack of trouble out of that before we're through.
Come. What's wrong with the river?
Nothing wrong with it, yet. But I have a feeling in my bones that river's going to rise when the rain gets down.
Well, what of it?
Yeah, I've been studying the lie of the rain, that's what. And I tell you, water put gold in them gulches, and it's been here once, it'll be here again.
All right, let it come. Maybe it'll put a bit more gold into them. We could use a bit more over on my claim.
It's not the gold I'm worried about. It's how much water comes with it, and how fast.
Roaring Camp lay in a triangular valley between the river and two hills. The only outlet was a steep trail over the summit of the hill that faced his cabin, so Stumpy's fears were not without reason. But during that early fall, the fears were all a trifle unreal. The luck was with Roaring Camp, and the luck was happy. Whether creeping over the pine boughs or lazily lying on his back, blinking at the leaves above him. For him, the birds continued to sing. The squirrels chattered and the late flowers bloomed. To him, the tall redwoods nodded familiarly and sleepily. The falling leaves still rustled, and the rooks continued to call.
Winds are getting up, Stumper.
That's right.
The air had quite a nip to it early on, turning colder.
You'd have had snow two nights back over on t'other side.
Oh, sure, but that's plenty higher up. Won't get no snow down here in the valley.
I guess that's right. But there's plenty of snow up in the Sierras.
Keeping the luck warm at night, Sir Oya?
That's right.
Don't want him coming to no harm. Starting a cold or that sort of thing.
That's right. Oh, he's doing fine.
Found this old spur. Thought he might like to play with it. File the points down so he can't go and hurt himself.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we'll like that.
Yes, the fall was nearly over. And after the fall came the winter. That winter of 1851 will long be remembered in the Californian foothills. The snow lay deep on the Sierras, and as the snow began to melt, every mountain creek became a river, and every river a lake. Each gorge and each gulch was transformed into a tumultuous watercourse that descended the hillsides, tearing down giant trees and scattering its drift and debris along the plain. Red Dog had been twice underwater, and Roaring Camp had been forewarned. At first it looked as though the valley might still escape. The water was running away to the south. And then, on one tempestuous night, the North Fork suddenly leaped over its banks and swept into the sheltered valley.
Oakhurst, that's you? You all right?
Oh, it's you, Sandy. Yeah, thank the Lord. I got away up the bank here when the water came to the bend. Where are the others?
Some of them up there over the Red Pines. There seem to be plenty missing.
Half the cattle have been missing by morning if it don't stop coming.
Yeah, you seen anything of Stumpy? Is he here?
Ain't seen him. Has he caught his cabin?
Yeah, caught it and swept it clean up the valley. There'll be a time to get clear.
Lord, I hope so. What about the luck?
Nobody seems to know. Where Stumpy is, the luck'll be.
There seemed no end to the terrors of that night. In the confusion of rushing water, crushing trees, and crackling timber, and the darkness which seemed to flow with the water and blot out the whole of the valley, Nothing could be done to collect the scattered camp. When the morning broke, the cabin of Stumpy, nearest to the riverbank, was gone. Higher up on the gulch, they found his body. But the pride, the hope, the joy, the luck of Roaring Camp had disappeared. All day they searched through the tangled mass of uprooted pines, the chaos and unearthly confusion that one short night had wrought in the valley. Men climbed up among the pine woods, calling endlessly, while hope could still be entertained. They were returning with sad hearts when a shout from the river bend recalled them. It was the relief boat from down the river.
About 30 missing, so far as we can tell.
Oh, I guess you got the full force of it up here. Washed right down to beyond Horseshoe.
Any of our people downriver at all?
I don't rightly know. We came across a man and a kid about 2 miles back.
A kid? A young kid? A baby?
That's right. Well, the fella said his name was Kentuck. It's about all in from the looks of
Oakhurst.
Him.
Oakhurst, they found him. 2 miles downstream. Come on, quick.
Yes, they had found him. It needed but a glance to show them Kentuck lying there, cruelly crushed and bruised, but still holding in his arms the luck of Roaring Camp. As they bent over the strangely assorted pair, they saw that the child was cold and pulseless.
He's dead.
Dane? Yeah, Kentuck. And you're dying, too. Dying? He's taken me with him.
That's right, Kentuck.
Tell the boys I've got the luck with me now.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll tell him, Kentuck. And the strong man, clinging to the frail babe as a drowning man is said to cling to a straw, drifted away into the shadowy river that flows forever to the unknown sea. This is Laurence Olivier again. This week in our play, based on the short story by Bret Hart, The Luck of Roaring Camp, our cast included Jack Ralph, Arthur Hill, Lionel Merton, Stuart Nickel, and Charles Irwin. I look forward to the pleasure of your company next week when I shall introduce another play. Until then, au revoir, and thank you.
Sir Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.